time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
Tom Brady is my Lord and Savior.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Good snap, good hold, kick is on its way, end over end, it is no good! Wow! Off to the right!
Plenty of mistakes by the Colts, definitely some mistakes by the Texans, an odd game to say the least that did not end how anyone thought it would end. It ended in a tie at 20, and that's all she wrote for week one. I'm Vanessa Richardson, Paul Gallant here, Sean Mapes behind the glass as always. Hope everybody enjoyed their week one NFL weekend. It was a fun one. Paul and I were both in the press box. We're going to get to some of the specifics. Describe your thoughts and your emotions in a couple of words from the tie.
I have deep steel blue balls, oh. Vanessa.
Hello, HR.
Deep steel blue balls. It was on the table. The fire was cooking.
He's wearing plaid today, so I don't know if that's impacting his behavior, but
they were up 20-3, and they didn't win. I know that when it comes to this team, you always should have low expectations until proven otherwise. But it was going so well. They played an immaculate third quarter. And to not lose, but tie.
It felt, yeah. And you're not the only one, by the way, that almost said loss. Rex Burkhead, after the game in the locker room, said, yeah, a tie just didn't make him very happy.
Honestly, it does kind of feel like a loss, just because, you know, we played so well in the first half and, you know, just kind of had chances in the second half and didn't convert and didn't move the ball when we needed to.
It's how I think a lot of guys felt. Everybody said they supported Lovey, Brandon Cooks, but nobody said they were happy about the choice to have it ended in a tie.
That's at least good. Look, I mean, it's a specific date. I was kind of happy there was no moment of silence for someone who's been getting a lot of moments of silences on a very specific day.
Now, who could that be?
The Queen, but a tie at the end of the first regular season game of the year on a very specific date. Look, it just felt un-American. You got to go for the W, and you heard Burkhead say it there. Think about all the chances the Colts gave you. I mean, they were trying to give you the game. Matt Ryan fumbled what? Two snaps?
Matt Ryan fumbled three snaps.
Three?
Hot Rod kicked out of bounds twice.
It looked like the same kick.
It was really bad.
It was deja vu. Then you also
and missed a field goal.
Rodrigo Blankenship missing a field goal. I don't know how many people have seen the movie Rasputin, where Russians are trying to kill Rasputin over and over again, and he somehow keeps surviving, but he's not even like putting up much of a fight. The Texans had so many chances to kill the Colts, and this is one that it's hard to feel good about walking away from, especially now next week you're going to play a Denver Broncos team that we'll see tonight in Monday Night Football on the road. You had an opportunity to beat the Indianapolis Colts. You got your asses kicked by them last year. You were kicking their behinds, and you tie. It feels like a loss to me.
Yeah, understandable. Let's set the scene a little bit before we hear from Lovey. Midfield, 24 seconds left. Texans had the ball, 4th and 3, and he chooses to take the tie instead of going for it and, you know, either trusting his offense to get it done or trusting his defense to stuff it or trusting the fact that Rodrigo Blankenship wasn't making field goals. Was your initial reaction frustration in the press box?
Yeah, I think I was more frustrated with the play before. Because they handed it off to Rex Burkhead, and I think a lot of people this morning are pretty frustrated with the amount of Rex Burkhead that they used. I think if you were watching the game on TV, that Tiki Barber said, well, they're using Rex Burkhead because they're trying to win, which, okay. Damian Pierce.
By the way, the Tiki, and who is the guy on play-by-play, Tom something?
I'm not sure.
Not rave reviews. We'll leave it at that.
Whatever. what you do need to know is Burkhead did get the ball a lot. There's a part of me that understands it because there was one play where Damian Pierce was supposed to pick up a blitz and he got absolutely clobbered. But Pierce clearly has a lot more sizzle juice to him. And it's 3rd and 1, it's 3rd and 2, whatever it was, is really going to Rex Burkhead.
He was running back 1.
Don't say that.
No, he was.
I know, but don't say that.
He was. I mean, there was no doubt that when we thought it would be Damian Pierce that it was Rex Burkhead. All right, let's hear from head coach Lovie Smith. This is not his first or second rodeo as a NFL head coach. It's his third. So he made the experienced decision to go for the tie, and here's why.
On the third down play before the fourth down play, we had, you know, the plan wasn't to lose, of course, yards on that. And I made a decision on fourth and three. And there's a lot of football left to go in the season. It's kind of simple as that. And I feel like a tie was better than a potential loss. Defensively, we weren't really stopping them off a lot there at the end.
Part of that, a tie was better than a loss. Well, do you think you're going to beat them the next time you play them, given the way that the Colts finally started moving the football in the fourth quarter? I got to say, I don't. I also don't feel very great about how the Texans would do against the Colts next time around, just given the way that Davis Mills looked. But, okay, that's a long ways away. This is what's very frustrating about having a defensive-minded head coach.
Yeah, you're not a fan.
Well, I mean, Vanessa, you mentioned that this is his third job, and it's not to say he's been bad at his job. I'm just saying in today's NFL, where you see Brian Daboll, the new head coach of the New York Giants, going for two against the Tennessee Titans and converting it, a Giants team that's been wretched for years, Lovie Smith, with a chance to maybe help turn the page here in Houston, he decides to punt it there. And I get the logic with the way that the Colts were moving the football. I do. In fact, that's not the decision that bothers me more. What bothers me more is where this game changed. Vanessa, the Texans had the Colts on the ropes when they were up 20-3 early in the fourth quarter. And when they're at, I believe, Indianapolis's, 36, 35-yard line, instead of going for a field goal with Kaimi Fairbairn, they chose to take a delay of game, and then they punted.
So that, to you, is where things changed? Because to me, the play before the ultimate decision, where Grover Stewart had such a mismatch with Justin Britt, and Justin Britt half the game looked like a disaster, by the way. This is supposed to be somebody that's obviously protecting the QB. That was very problematic to me as well.
It was, no doubt about it. Do we like Kaimi Fairbairn as a kicker? Serious question. Do we trust Kaimi Fairbairn as a fan watching him out there? Because the last time I was at NRG Stadium, which was last year when I came back and I surprised everyone at the Seahawks game. Yes, that is how we met, actually. Kaimi Fairbairn hit a 61-yard field goal in that game. Jeremy Branham put this out yesterday. Kaimi Fairbairn is 18 of 28 in his career on field goals of 50-plus yards. This was, what, a 53, 54-yard field goal attempt? They chose to take a delay of game and punt. You're not playing at Soldier Field, which looked like a World War One battlefield.
Fun for the Bears.
Right.
Bad for the 49ers. Do we have Lovie on that decision?
We do.
I think we have Lovie on that decision.
Cody Stutes asked Lovie about the decision
to punt there
instead of kick the field goal.
Well, it was, like you said, roughly in its range. Didn't feel like that was it at the time. Feel like, you know, backing them up, playing defense was our best option then.
You're up 17-3. It's the NFL. You're a defensive-minded head coach. These are the things you do. That's what bothers me about that specific decision, and combine that with the decision to not go for it at the end when you are the Texans and they are the AFC South frontrunners, the Colts. These are the things that happens when you have a guy that says, I would rather do the safe thing than do the aggressive thing. And generally, the defensive coaches are going to be that way, where the offensive coaches are going to be the other way.
I thought the additions of O.J. Howard and Jerry Hughes are promising.
I got to say, they were
and
both
not
great.
And not only from the specific, okay, Jerry and O.J. were great. I do think it says something about Nick's ability to eye talent. And one thing that you had tweeted out that I thought was great, it's not that like, oh, well why did the Bills release O.J. Howard?
The Bills
have a deep stacked roster. To me, what's promising is that Nick Caserio is now showing a record of being able to identify guys that it might not be working out for them in their particular situation and saying, I think that it will work out for them here, and I think we can get them for a fair price. To me, that was a promising part of yesterday's game. O.J. Howard, of course, 2 touchdowns. Jerry Hughes, some monster plays.
Howard said after the game in the locker room that Pep Hamilton had told him, because they're going up against Gus Bradley's defense, and Gus Bradley has been running a cover three into the ground for the last couple of years. I don't think he's very skilled as a defensive coordinator anymore. When he was in Seattle, that's a little bit of a different story. He said that, yeah, we're going to be open up the seam every single play. And, I mean, both those touchdowns. Beautiful balls by Davis Mills up the seam. What did you think about Davis Mills in this game?
I thought that I thought that there was some progress.
Yeah, that's what we're telling ourselves for being optimistic.
I am trying to be optimistic. I really liked the way that the defense looked. But Justin Britt and Davis Mills specifically, those two concern me. Those are two very important positions on the team. I don't have to tell you that.
I would agree with you there. I know Laremy Tunsil's getting a lot of guff, too, for the play where Davis Mills got sacked, fumbled, and helped Indianapolis after, you know, they kicked a field goal, get the ball back, and make it a one-score game really quickly. That was very frustrating. But with Mills, he seemed to get, I think, more panicky as the game went along.
Oh, the fourth quarter, he looked so anxious.
Because in the third, he had a stretch where he was hitting pass after pass after pass. My issue with Mills is the happy feet that he showed, especially there was one throw that he had on the last drive, and I was like, it looked like somebody that was about to, am I allowed to say it? You know, when you feel like things are about to start going. You know, like
the drizzles.
Drizzles. Okay. Thank you, Vanessa. I forgot that you came up with that a couple of weeks ago. He looked like he had the drizzles on that play. And there are a lot of throws that he made to the sideline where he's just sailing the ball up into the top, into like the first row of the stands. That to me is something that a guy with an arm like that can't be that way. He's not particularly mobile. If he's going to be throwing to the sidelines, he's got to be accurate. And there were a couple of times where I think he was sailing it on purpose because he wanted to avoid an interception. But there were some others where I'm like, oh, man, what's going on? And one pass that he had in particular to the left side of the field where a Colts player almost intercepted it and should have intercepted it, where he was just woefully off. I'm not feeling good about Davis Mills in my first Davis Mills experience.
It is going to be his first full year. And he didn't play a lot of senior year of college. Don't forget that. And then he didn't start all of last year. Tyrod Taylor did. So we've said this before and we'll say it again. Davis Mills, the determination is going to have to be made this year, whether they're riding with him or not as their starting quarterback. I thought we saw some good things. How about Jeff Driscoll Cat?
The Driscoll Cat is hilarious, and at the very least, it provided some much needed comedic relief. And by the way, it worked. How about that? That was
cool.
It
worked both times, by the way.
It worked both times.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to have our producer come in because Texas, they're back. Or are they? That's coming up next.
This is ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
A fun game. It was a exciting game. Texas Bama, one for the ages. We're going to get Pauly G's reaction in a second because he was there. Let's start with our producer Sean Mapes, who is a UT grad and experienced all of the emotions as Alabama won 20-19. Sean, what was that like?
Overall, pretty encouraging. Like, obviously, like, I wouldn't even say it was a heartbreaking way to lose because I didn't think they were going to win.
It was a nice surprise.
Yes, the entire time I was like, who is this on defense? Actually, Gus Johnson literally said it on the broadcast, who is this Texas defense? Because we haven't seen those guys. Who is on the field Saturday? I mean, it's literally a lot of the same people from last year, but they played like they're the Monstars instead of who they showed to be. Last year, they're the 100th ranked defense in basically everything.
Yeah.
Like, they're in the 90s or 100s in everything. And they're 20-point underdogs to Alabama with the Heisman Trophy winner and the best defensive player in the nation. And they only gave up 20 points, and they lost by one. And they're leading by two with a minute and a half left. And, I mean, everyone's going to talk about the safety and some of the blown calls, which I try not to get into ref talk.
But there were some bad ones.
A million years of James Harden playoffs.
Rooting interest,
yeah.
By the way.
A million years of James Harden playoffs and seeing who does the ref talk discussions.
Bill Worrell.
I don't want to be in the ref talk.
I love Bill.
He's a legend. But yes.
Hates the refs.
Well, they are biased against
us. And both. Hates the refs
always.
Too.
But I think the game.
I love both of them so much.
The game came down to 3rd and 3 with a minute and a half left. If they pick up the first down, they can run clock and kick a field goal and win at the buzzer. Instead, they get sacked and Alabama takes a timeout. They still kick it, but now there's a minute and a half left for Bryce Young. At that point, Bryce Young needs a field goal. There's I at no point was I was like, oh, we got this. Like, it was, oh, this is how we lose. So it overall, encouraging. Quinn Ewers looked awesome. The offense lived up 100% to their potential for as long as Quinn Ewers was out there. Hudson Card didn't poop himself. That was nice.
Some mocks.
Yes.
Limping around out there.
He recovered nicely from throwing a back-breaking pick six against Kansas last year that ended up being important. So, yeah, overall, again, you'd like to win the game, but almost it's almost good that they didn't win because we'd be sitting – if they won that game, we'd be sitting right now and Texas would be ranked, like, fifth in the nation. That,
and then it would be a letdown.
This is not the fifth best
team. So, similar to the Texans game, a nice little surprise that it was competitive.
Yes, Texans way worse, though.
Yeah.
Texans blew a 17-point
true,
lead.
True. Okay, you were at the game. Now, you tweeted, I should explain this to me, because you tweeted that you needed A&M tailgate recommendations, et cetera. You talked about going to the A&M game. How did you end up in Austin?
Well, none of the Aggies responded to me.
The 12th man was not helping Paul?
They were not very hospitable. I mean, I mugged somebody and stole their Aggie ring. I mean, I should have been allowed into the fun. And noted, wrote that down. All of a sudden, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. One of my friends gives me a call. Come to Austin tomorrow. We'll figure it out. I go to Austin. I end up at the UT game in the second half sitting on the 50-yard line. I don't know how that happened. All I will say is that I love my friends. Sean, I did bring something back for you.
Aww.
I did. And I just,
you don't have to bring a gift. I've been to Austin many times.
No,
did you go to school there?
Lived there four years.
Yeah, I was going to say you went to that main campus,
This isn't patronizing and this isn't sarcastic, okay?
Okay.
I feel like I'm about to get patronized.
Here's a moral victory for you. Congratulations. I'm not being sarcastic at all. Seriously, it was a moral victory. Here you go. Here's a dub.
This is... so patronizing.
Yeah, I was going to say.
This is the University of Texas football we're talking about.
I was very frustrated watching that. I was wearing burnt orange, sitting with my two best friends, both of whom are diehard UT fans. I was biting my nails throughout that game because I'm thinking to myself the whole way through, there's no way they're going to pull this off. And the game just continues, and it continues. And then at halftime, you miss that 20-yard field goal, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, yeah. Well, I mean, second half.
That's also why I don't do ref talk. Texas made plenty of mistakes.
That 20-yard missed field goal, good God. Everyone was just like, oh, my God. This is the worst way to go into halftime.
More surprising than he missed that one is that he made, like, the 45-yard to win.
Right? He makes this incredible field goal afterwards. You have no faith in him whatsoever. You're exactly right, Sean, about Quinn Ewers. Ewers showed some real balls in that game. It's a shame that Xavier Worthy dropped that touchdown pass down the middle of the field because, I mean, that was a beautiful, beautiful throw. He gets hurt. There was some Alabama fan that was sitting in front of us who said, and it was a girl. She's like, I think he's milking that. When Quinn Ewers went down, I think he's milking that. Not kidding. Like, actually said that. The most frustrating part about this for the UT fans out there, and I consider myself someone who leans with UT on most things, is that the opportunity was there, and there were a couple of missed calls, and you're just going to be thinking, what if, for a really long time. I got to give, by the way, the Horns fans out there a lot of credit. And multiple people told me this, too, because I was like, man, this seems a lot more lively than the last time I went to a UT game, which was against Notre Dame. And they said, yeah, this is like maybe the most lively that a UT crowd has been, understandably, against Alabama. One last thought, and this is, again, like directed towards the Aggies, that did not tell me where to go up in College Station. Noted, when I go to Texas games, they are 3-0 against the spread.
Oh.
And they've played.
I'm good luck guy. Congrats.
They've played
Notre Dame. Didn't think you
stooped that low. Notre Dame, one. They've played Oklahoma in the Cotton Bowl against Kyler Murray, one. And they played against Alabama, cover the spread.
By 19.
Mm-hmm.
The blowout covered the spread.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. We have a man named Pena on the line. Our friend Pena would like to talk about Texas football. Hey, Pena.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Yo.
Hey.
So I called a couple, maybe a month or two ago, and I said this. Texas might lose the game, but they're not going to get blown out. And I was right. So everybody that laughed at me behind your little radios, so I said that, suck a big fat one.
Whoa!
He is back, and Quinn Ewers would have won the game by 24. He would have never got hurt. Thank you. Have a great day.
You are the typical Longhorn fan, and for that, we thank you for your call, Pena.
I'll let Pena have that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, today.
Again,
yes,
he gets the moral victory, too. Everyone gets a moral victory today, okay?
A&M does not get a moral victory at
oh
all.
My God,
A&M lost
Jesus,
to Appalachian A&M. State 17-14. Oh. Haynes King, once again, did not look like he should be a starting
he
quarterback
stinks.
On this level of a college football team. Thoughts?
Well, Jimbo Fisher was asked about Haynes King after the game, and... Man, this is what happens when you give a coach a little bit of room to misdirect. Here is Jimbo Fisher.
I know much of it is on the offensive line, but do you give another quarterback a shot moving
possibly
forward?
Possibly. We'll evaluate everything. We'll evaluate everything. It's not just on the offensive line, guys. We had other – I mean, we had some mistakes up front, but we had some mistakes out wide. We had mistakes at tight. I mean, we had – everybody kind of took a turn. You know what I'm saying? And when all of a sudden you only have eight possessions, that can happen. And we'll evaluate everything we do, Brent, seriously. I mean, we'll look at everybody and what goes on, and whatever we have to do to be successful, we'll do.
Oh, my God. I mean, if you watched Haynes King against Sam Houston State, was that not frustrating?
Yeah, I mean, it's his second week in a row he hasn't looked adequate.
13 of 20 for 97 yards in this game. Yeesh. And look, Appalachian State last week gave up 60 points. So, I don't know. I don't think they have a very good defense.
I think... College game day is now going to the Troy Appalachian State game. Did I see that correctly on social media?
If you saw how they handled it in Boone, North Carolina after they won, did you see?
That's going to be psycho.
The
yeah.
two crowds that like just mashed together.
Somebody flipped a car.
So basically they're going to, I mean, because next week A&M play, or the Miami goes to College Station to play. And so I'm willing to bet game day would have been at that game. It's also an ESPN game. In College
that
Station.
That is where the initial plan was.
And then they lost, and they go to the campus of the team that beat you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't that a kick in the teeth?
Well, speaking of kicks, and this was a bad week for kickers across football, but worse than Haynes King, amazingly, was the field goal attempt that A&M had with about 4 minutes left, where they could have tied things up against Appalachian State. I mean, he missed the
now,
ball.
Now, is this the kicker that is from Houston that won the game? No, because he
kicker.
Graduated.
Different
okay,
kicker.
Okay. He would have nailed it. And then quickly, let's mention Texas Tech.
Hell yeah, guns up, baby.
Yeah, guns up.
I mean, shout out to Cody Stutes. Here's the thing. I'm going to sound like Paul because I want them to be good. I don't know that I feel good about the Cougs. They barely won last week against UTSA. And yes, I know UTSA put some respect on their name. But they barely won last week. They lost to Texas Tech. They're heading for the Big 12 soon. I mean, they've got to be able to win these games.
Because Tech's towards the bottom of the Big 12. No offense to Tech fans.
No, and again,
things
might be
changing.
Shout out to Cody Stutes.
And things might be changing. They have a new head coach. And, I mean, they do deserve a lot of credit for winning that game. I mean, look, they've played in two electric games to open the year. And I would imagine, Vanessa, that the rest of the way that UH is not going... Like, that's the two toughest games that they probably had on their schedule.
Yeah, they do have a friendly schedule.
And UTSA... And then Cincinnati probably is the last one. But, I mean, you know, UTSA looked pretty damn electric as well this past Saturday against Army in a game where they had, like, went back and forth with Army actually throwing for, like, passing yards in that game. But, yeah, I understand where you're coming from on the UH side of things. Like, this was a season where a lot of people were thinking 10, 11 wins or something like that. And this loss is, you know, not the end of the world, but
no,
you had a chance of winning that game, and you let Tech win.
It's a lot of fun being like the cardiac Cougs in, like, you know, every game it's not over. You're down two touchdowns and you still make overtime, but it's like, doing that over a course of a college football season is how you get beat, and you're supposed to be a team that doesn't get beat.
No, and they've got, you know, I trust Dana Holgorsen and Doug Belk. I think they have one of the best college coaching staffs probably in the state of Texas. So I really hope that they can win some more games in convincing fashion. Did you guys bet on any college football games this weekend?
No, thank God.
If I
had a bad weekend.
Hopefully you did it at BUSR.com/ESPN. Football season is here, baby. You can double your deposit within the first 24 hours. Maybe you have an NFL futures bet that you know will cash in. You know who the Super Bowl champs will be. The Texans, by the way, you can still bet on some Texans games. And how about this? You can still get the Astros at +400. I think we all feel good about the Astros World Series chances. Good news. Even if you're a blackjack guy or a roulette girl, you can do it at BUSR.com/ESPN. All of it. BUSR.com/ESPN.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Dad, hush!
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Vanessa and Gallant. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time.
It is football time, and week one is in the books. You hear it every morning before our show starts. Paul Gallant, Boston native, saying Tom Brady is my Lord and Savior.
Yes.
And the Lord and Savior did well. 19-3 final score, Bucks versus the Cowboys. You never like to see anybody get injured, and Dak Prescott left the game with what looked like a hand or a wrist injury. Here's Mike McCarthy with that update.
Is it fractured or just ligaments, or you don't even know at this point?
Well, I mean, they're talking as it's going to require some surgery, but we haven't talked to the doctor yet, so it's a significant injury.
Mike, is it a broken thumb, or are you sticking with hand?
It's on his hand, in the thumb area. I mean, it's a significant injury. Once we get all the facts, you know, we'll get that to you. I mean, like I said, he hasn't seen a doctor yet.
Well, so the best part about this is Jerry actually met with the media before Mike McCarthy did. Jerry is the only owner in the NFL that does this, where he likes to break the news of his own injuries on his team. So thoughts on the fact that they weren't even good with Dak, and now he's out and it will be Cooper Rush.
This could be a very long season, again, for Dallas, much like it was a couple of years ago. I think what's really frustrating for Dallas about this one is just realizing how limited their options are for Dak, if he's even healthy to throw to. I don't know if CeeDee Lamb's ready to be a number one by himself. The Bucs do have a good defense, but CeeDee Lamb had 2 catches on 11 targets in this game.
That's a great stat. I mean, it's bad, but it's telling.
Right. And, I mean, they could never really get into running the football. And give the Cowboys defense credit. They were bending and not breaking. I mean, how many drives before they finally got that touchdown did the Cowboys hold the Bucs to a field goal? But the offense, and guess what? Once again, I mean, we talk about Mike McCarthy, and he comes in here and he says, yeah, I'm here to help change the culture and stop the penalties. 10 penalties for 73 yards. I mean,
that's a great point.
Same stuff, as always.
They were the most penalized last
penal
year. All right, go ahead, Sean.
No, it's fine. You know, California Penal League. Yeah. It works. We're not talking about penal, okay? That would be
inappropriate.
You know,
that would be very inappropriate, unlike me.
All right. Are we good?
Yeah, we're good.
We got it. Okay. They also it's also important to note that they traded Amari Cooper for like a 5th-round pick.
Yeah.
Like right before every wide receiver went for like multiple firsts.
Yeah.
And it seems like they would have liked Amari Cooper out there instead of like the undrafted rookies that they're putting out there, but that's just me.
Quickly, thoughts on Tom Brady's performance separate of the Cowboys.
It was okay. I mean, they won that game because Leonard Fournette, who, remember, we talked about earlier this offseason.
Noted fatso, Leonard
noted
Fournette.
Noted fatty, boom batty, Leonard Fournette comes out and has 127 yards on 21 carries. And Julio Jones looked pretty damn good, too. That's the first time we've seen
him
look like that in a couple of years. So, yeah, Bucks. I mean, my Super Bowl team going into the year. All those stories of this offseason about Tom Brady, see Giselle Bundchen tweeting, go Tommy. They looked fine.
Yeah, that means there's another one. What? Commanders beat the Jags 28-22. This was the most Carson Wentz performance ever because he had some great plays. He also had like 2 interceptions.
His interceptions were so bad.
They were very bad. So this was very on brand, but they did get the win over the Jags. The Jags look like they have improved. Trevor Lawrence, again, I think you can see the Doug Peterson effect on him, that there's a little bit more competence. Either team, I don't think, is going to be somebody that we're going to talk about during playoff time.
I agree with you that there was a little bit more out of Lawrence in this one, and it felt like the Jags have more of a pulse. But to quote Anna, whatever the hell her last name is, from that show on Netflix.
Very specific.
This is a great metaphor.
Damn it.
All right.
They're not special.
Yeah.
Oh. Trevor Lawrence is not special.
Okay. Yeah, okay? Inventing Anna.
Inventing Anna. Thank you. She, check that. Trevor Lawrence, he has long hair, my bad. Trevor Lawrence had an awful interception at the end of the game where he's trying to do too much. I still don't think Lawrence is anything to write home about.
Yeah.
I mean, that could change as the season goes along, but everyone was making excuses for him with Urban Meyer last year. They played the Commanders. They didn't play like a great team.
True.
bleeping Washington Commanders.
I've been curious to see Wink Martindale's defense for the New York Giants just because he spent so long in Baltimore. They were able to hold the Titans to 20 points, and they did get the win. But the man being praised is Brian Daboll, who decided to go for two. Here's Daboll on that decision.
When did you know you were going to go for two?
When we got the ball.
Why?
Go for the win. We're going to be aggressive. That's what we want to do. That's the mindset I want the players to have. If it didn't work, I could live with it. You know, I thought that was the right decision. You know, you're an inch away or whatever it was. I trust Saquon. I grabbed a couple of the defensive players that have busted their tails out there, along with some of the offensive guys that weren't out there. And I said, hey, we got the ball wherever it was. They said, we score. I'm going for two. You guys good with that? And they said, you know, F yeah.
F yeah. New York Post this morning, by the way, day balls of steel.
That's amazing. It's not quite deep steel blue balls like I have, but day balls of steel.
Oh, like you have. That's a bummer.
Totally work. Yeah. Okay. I still have them. And I'm reminded of them because the defensive-minded head coach, Lovie Smith, decides to punt at the end of the game and kick a field goal well within Kyeme Fairbairn's range. And Brian Daboll, who's in his first year with the team in the New York Giants who have been wretched for years, and he says on that drive that he's going to go for two. And while it's hilarious to think of all the miserable Titans fans watching A.J. Brown dominate for the Eagles against the Lions and Derrick Henry looking like a shell of himself and Ryan Tannehill not really having anyone to work with, I love that part of it, but I am jealous of the Giants. And shout out to Saquon Barkley. That was an awesome performance considering Daniel Jones is the quarterback in front of him. That was a really gutsy win by the New York Giants, who might actually be somewhat relevant again. Maybe some of those games that are foisted upon us for Sunday Night Football featuring two generically bad NFC East teams won't be as bad this year.
The Cowboys are on primetime four other times this season. That should be fun.
Oh, no.
All right, Pittsburgh was able to hang on against Cincinnati, but TJ Watt believes he tore his pec. He literally walked off the field and said, I tore my pec. He's getting an MRI today to see if that is what happened. I'm always forever frustrated for the Watt brothers because they just cannot stay healthy.
Yeah, you feel bad for him. That game was beyond drunk. I mean, that's one of the more ridiculous games I think I've seen.
Joe Burrow, rust?
Joe Burrow, it must have been rust, right?
The appendix. That was the source of all of his powers.
Four interceptions in that game.
And a fumble.
A fumble. I think he got sacked seven times. So much for the Bengals' revamped offensive line. Still at the end, they had a chance to win. And Evan McPherson, who was like an amazing kicker, he's not able to hit that extra point, the high
snap.
He
got blocked. Yeah.
Or was that check that. The extra point got blocked.
Yeah, but then the high snap on third down, when they kicked it on third down, that's always rough when that happens.
You want to watch bad kicking? That game had some absolutely horrendous kicking. I think the Steelers had one go off the crossbar in overtime too.
Right, and then of course Hot Rod here at NRG Stadium.
I was going to say the Bengals Steelers game was like a juiced up version of Colts Texans.
Yeah, it was. Guys, we're going to have more NFL to talk about. Definitely. In the 11 o'clock hour because we have three or four big stories that we didn't even get to yet. Oh, yeah, it's week one, baby, in the books. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're talking a little bit of Astros, and should the Astros be worried about a certain team in the American League, not named the Yankees? That's coming up on Vanessa and Gallant.
ESPN 97.5. Welcome back to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Well, you know, it was a busy weekend in H-Town and in sports in general when we're just now getting to the Houston Astros, who had a good weekend overall. They beat the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim 4-3 on Friday. They did lose 6-1 on Saturday, and then yesterday, dominant 12-4 win. Breggy had a fun grand slam. I believe that was the third in his career. And you were there, you said, Friday.
I was there on Friday. It is really interesting to see those who are covering the Los Angeles Angels. You can tell that they have a very heavy international presence now covering Shohei Ohtani. And you can see why, because Ohtani's just damn good. I mean, he had a great start on Saturday. He had very close to a home run on Friday night in what was a very wild game. You know, the best part about that game, Vanessa, was seeing the way that Lance McCullers looked, where he goes seven innings and had six strikeouts along the way. You don't traditionally expect McCullers to go that long in a game.
And he got to 105 pitches, said he was feeling pretty good afterwards. Outside of the home run by Mike Trout and that hit by Shohei Ohtani, I thought it was a really impressive performance from McCullers. And, you know, the pitching is loaded as you get closer and closer to the actual postseason. The hitting is still something that you wonder about, but yesterday also makes you feel a little bit better as we get closer and closer to the
playoffs.
They're
definitely going to have to hit. I was so concerned about McCullers when he came back. I think everybody was. Mm-hmm. And then he's been throwing gas. His location has been pretty good. There's only been a couple of games where he's maybe had some command issues, and every single time he's addressed it and talked about that rehab. I think he and Justin Verlander, obviously they're veterans, mm-hmm. you know, more so Verlander than McCullers, but Verlander is always very real. They're both very realistic about where they're at. You never hear them, you know, praising themselves too much. They always seem to be happy when they do well, and then when they're maybe subpar and they don't pitch.
They're level-headed. Yeah, they're the kind of quarterbacks you feel good about.
Even keeled. Yeah, you feel good about them going into the playoffs. But yes, the hitting need more of that.
But look, I asked Dusty Baker about this on Friday because Yordan had a ball that he connected on early on in the game that ended up being a flyout. And when he hit it at first, you're like, oh, damn, he really crushed that. But it's a flyout. But then a little bit later, he had a double. Saturday, he had a double. Yesterday, he had a home run.
Okay.
That's
not talked about enough.
That is the best part about what happened this weekend. And the Angels started showing him a little extra respect on Sunday where they walked him twice. So if Yordan can continue this little streak, that makes you feel good. Like, the best part about yesterday is what the offense did. The Angels are the Angels. We know that. And, of course, the Astros, as we've talked about ad nauseum in this month, it really is going to be a rather boring month for baseball casuals who are just like, let's just get to the postseason.
But without Michael Brantley, that Yordan making contact and getting hits is crucial.
Oh, no,
I mean, it's always
it.
Crucial anyway, but without the bat of Michael Brantley, which there are so many storylines on this team between the pitching, between, you know, just the success they've had, that it's easy to forget almost that one of the most solid bats is out for the year in Michael Brantley. So definitely good news about Yordan. All right, there's a team, and I teased this coming into the segment, that Paul thinks the Astros maybe should have on their radar, not name the Yankees.
Yeah.
Explain yourself with a little Mariners watch.
There we go. Mariners watch.
A radio show host in Seattle called Paul Gallant.
2022.
1-1 to Gino.
September 11th, the Mariners put out their own version of fireworks.
What?
Standing up for the United States of America against a team with a racist nickname. Hey, Atlanta, you're so hot, huh, beating the Astros in the World Series. You haven't played me. You think you can handle Julio Rodriguez? No. You think you can handle Eugenio Suarez? No. Oh, look at you. Rallying from a 6-1 deficit. We just put 2 more runs on you in the 9th. You sit down. You go home. Because at the end of the day, I'm your reckoning. Mariners look good this weekend.
That was a good one.
2-3.
Controversial, but well thought out.
2-3 against the Braves. I don't want to play them in the playoffs. I've said it once. I'll say it again. They're getting more and more confident.
Now, is this because she's the mistress that you were there for 2 years in Seattle?
She's putting thirst traps out there. I mean, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do?
I mean,
you know, I cannot like look away.
I do know you cannot look away
an
from
HPOA.
What you can't have.
Yes, I well, that too. But also, I mean, you see a nice donk out there, and I mean, you're gonna look. Julio is crushing it right now. I mean, this guy's the rookie of the year. He's lapped Jeremy Pena. He was so good yesterday. 2 home runs. And by the way, Suarez also 2 home runs. Adam Frazier, Adam Frazier also had a good game out there. I read the stat line wrong. I was like, did he have 2 home runs too? That doesn't add up. They have competent pitching and they have power and they are not scared of you. And I mean, taking 2 of 3 against the red-hot Atlanta Braves team is no joke, and I know. I mean, they're the Mariners, and historically the Astros have owned them.
No, but they're young and they're fast.
I don't want this team at all. They're the one team in the American League. I do not want to see the Astros play, and it has nothing to do with the fact that I will be mildly torn. I will still lean with the Astros.
I'm all out of faith.
That's a good song.
This is how I feel.
He's gonna be wearing that a split shirt.
Remember when we did that? We did a segment talking about Torn. What was it for?
Oh, we did sing this before. What? I don't know.
It was a while ago. Natalie Imbruglia, shout out.
So the Tigers are in town for the Astros they are going to Detroit September 12th, 13th, 14th. So that's today through Wednesday. And then they play the Oakland Athletics. And then that's followed by Tampa Bay. Now, Tampa Bay could present a little bit of a challenge. But like we said, the next couple of days, really for the next week, they should be able to pick up a couple of good wins.
Yeah, they should be. And again, I think this is over, the American League race. I mean, it was kind of funny hearing that on Friday when I was at the press conference for Dusty Baker, where I want to say, I think it was Brian McTaggart. It might have been somebody else. But they asked Dusty about, hey, is this where you start thinking about resting guys? How awesome is that? And that's because of how the Yankees are falling apart.
It's a luxury for sure.
Now, the Yankees did take 2 of 3 from the Rays over the weekend. So I think as far as the AL East race goes, they're still in pretty firm command of it. But on Friday, they had like an absolutely catastrophic loss where Aaron Hicks, their left fielder, made like 2 of the worst plays you'll ever see. And they're, absolute barbarian fans started throwing bottles on the field. And the PA announcer
up with that? I didn't see that this happened. What are the details on this?
They're trash.
Because Cowboys fans, by the way, threw things at Dak Prescott. What is up with this?
They did?
Yes. It like went viral on Twitter. Did you see that video, Sean?
No, I missed that.
It was awful.
You sure it wasn't a Florida man? Maybe a Florida man was in the crowd. I mean, that's the only excuse you got.
Hey, there are a lot of Cowboys fans in Florida and everywhere because they have the most bandwagon fans, it seems like, out of any team in the NFL.
But yeah. It's the Bronx. But it was interesting anyway to circle back to Dusty. He gave a kind of non-answer to it, but you really do seem to have the American League number one seed locked up. And I'm happy about that on a personal level. I know it doesn't matter, and some people are probably thinking to themselves, well, you want to have the best matchup in the playoffs. Sure, I guess. I say go for the one. Make sure that the Yankees know one more time before they end up firing Brian Cashman that they could not get it done despite all the money in the world and a cheapskate owner.
Home field advantage is a real thing, and that's why they want the number one seed. I've never thought that the Astros actually care about the number one seed for pride purposes. I mean, I'm sure they'd like it, whatever. I think it is more about the home field advantage. They've looked better than the Yankees. The Yankees have struggled so much this month.
Yeah. And look, I mean, it's 12 teams in the playoffs now. So that's also going to be pretty interesting to see how all of this works out. This is the first time that we're seeing that. And, you know, the one advantage to being the one and to being the two, you get byes. So that is also a reason, obviously, to get the one seed. But does it really matter ultimately? I guess we're going to find out. It's a weird new format, and I'm not going to lie. I do miss just the old format when only 8 teams made the playoffs.
It's going to be tighter playoffs. There's not going to be as much time in between. I believe that is it the ALCS that's going to be a lot tighter, or the ALDS?
It's
both of the DSs, I should say.
I took a look at the schedule, and it's going to be a bit of a zoo for a couple of weeks. Yeah. But that's good. Playoff baseball is great, and I think the more playoff baseball, the better. But this entire format itself is going to be, I think, just a lot. And sitting back and waiting, like there's 2 wild card series in each league is bizarre.
Yeah, if there's going to be a West Coast games, that travel situation will be tricky for sure. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant. Yes, it ended in a tie. They say a tie is like kissing your sister. Is it actually, or are you happy as a Texans fan? Plus, first impressions from some of these players we saw suit up yesterday at NRG. That's next.
ESPN 97.5.